Welcome to the Grappling Discourse Podcast. Today, I have a couple of crazy stories to tell you guys, but first, the PGF is replacing two of the coaches. So Andre Galval is out. He is having knee surgery, and I wish him a speedy recovery. Supposedly, he has agreed to do the next season, season 7. He is being replaced by Dean Lister. And Eddie's out. He is stepping into the role now as head referee. Now, I kind of predicted this. I couldn't fathom a world where Eddie would take somebody other than a 10th Planet person, and I just didn't find it feasible for him to get all the 10th Planet guys. And he said he didn't feel comfortable coaching against 10th Planet guys, like if he had an Alliance guy or a Gracie Baja guy, and he had to coach against 10th Planet, he couldn't do it. And I really respect Eddie for that. I know how much he loves the system. Anytime there's a major event like the ADCC trials, Eddie was there mat side for a lot of the black belt matches, just there rooting guys on. And he's just a great leader for the organization. And it'll be kind of cool to see him out there reffing. He does some of the reffing for EBI and TJJ. And in a rule set like this, it's not really important. Essentially, you're just there to reset the match as well as call a submission, or maybe somebody's put to sleep and you just need to be there to separate the athletes. But he is being replaced by his teacher, Jean-Jacques Machado. Now, I don't know how Brandon knows all of these famous people. The fact that he can just call and get Dean Lister or Jean-Jacques Machado, like, I don't know who's doing that. I didn't know Brandon had that type of pull. I mean, I know he's becoming a big player in the jiu-jitsu world, but it seems these days, Brandon's got a lot of connections. He can just make things happen. And you kind of have to have that as a promoter, because at any given moment, your star attraction or your star athlete can go down with an injury and you have to replace them. I saw Kaiwan Gracie pulled out. I believe he also hurt his knee. And so he was replaced by Kevin Sherrill. And I thought that was an interesting choice. Kevin was on my team last season, and Kevin didn't have the best season. He definitely underperformed. I do not believe he was subbed by anybody, even though Elijah popped his foot pretty bad. But Kevin had a pretty, like, he looked good, and he had a lot of, like, really good offensive plays. I know he took the back multiple matches. He just couldn't seal the deal. So guys like him and Cam Hurd, to me, have a lot to prove this season, just because they didn't score a lot of points last season, didn't make the playoffs, and now there's a huge step up in competition. So I'm going to be interested to see if they take full advantage of this opportunity, and if they could find a way into the top 10, that'll be a big, big season for both of them. I also saw where Craig Jones is continuing to throw shade at ADCC. So Craig has announced that he is hosting a donations-based seminar where all the proceeds will go to ADCC athletes, and he's doing it right before the ADCC championship. So the day before the event, he will be giving out a seminar or doing a seminar, and all the money will go to people that lose in the first round of ADCC, because those guys will not get paid. And I have to wonder, because I feel like Mo is a pretty sensitive guy, and look, he works incredibly hard. What he's done for ADCC is amazing. I don't know Mo by any means, but I've just seen him go back and forth with people, and just some of the behind-the-scenes stuff I hear is that, yeah, like he just doesn't take criticism very well, and he's kind of quick on the trigger to kind of go at people or kind of write people off or even ban them from the ADCC events. But I just kind of wonder how Craig going at Mo affects B team. Like, will J-Rod get an invite? Will Mo hold it against the B team athletes? A guy like Adam Bradley, who I still think a lot of people think he should have won that under 99 kilogram division. Like, will he get an invite? Or will B team guys kind of get snubbed just due to Craig going at ADCC and Mo Jasm in particular? That'll be really interesting to see. But I've got two stories I want to tell you guys. And the first involves drugs. When I first started training with Brandon, as many as you know, I'd been training for almost a year. And Brandon's gym, obviously 10th Planet, no gi. And when I first joined, Brandon had just received his purple belt, and he had promoted 6 students to blue. Now, It's really weird because a lot of the students, like the true like blue flu happened when I got there. It seemed like a lot of the blue belts were on their way out. And so there were a couple of them I didn't train with until years later. They just happened to come back. But those blue belts, there's only two of them that were consistent, and the rest, again, kind of all fell out or kind of were hit or miss. And so for the first 6 months, I didn't know who these blue belts were. And the classes were pretty small, but it seemed like each time I'd go in, there'd be somebody new there. Well, I remember I went into a day class, and there was a student by the name of Toby. And I was partnered with Toby. Brandon partnered me with Toby, and we were going over the lockdown. And I was new to the 10th Planet system. I had never done any of the truck, any of the lockdown stuff. I mean, I'm a white belt. Had no clue what was going on, and I remember Toby teaching me and walking me through the movements. And I thought, okay, the way this guy's talking and the way he just was talking with authority, like he'd been doing it for a while, I was like, he's got to be one of Brandon's black belts. And I remember asking Brandon about that. I was like, "Hey, like, what's up with this Toby guy? Like, is he one of your blue belts?" And he just kind of laughed and was like, "No. He's like, Toby is just a guy that came from this, like, came off the street. He just walked in one day, and he's had drug problems in the past, and he actually came in high. We weren't sure what he was high on, but he challenged one of the karate instructors to like a fight, and you know, they had to, kind of talk him down and like go, but Brandon." Just saw him and just like invite him to come in. And every now and again, he would just pop into jiu-jitsu classes and he'd pick some things up. Cause like I said, he was helping me through the lockdown, but he's like, no, he's not one of my blue belts. And at that old gym where, we were training out of a karate gym at the time. And at that old gym, it was in the shadier part of town. And so it wasn't uncommon for people who were, high off drugs or drunk to kind of come in. And I know the karate guys had some crazy stories over the years because they've been there since I think the early 80s, that spot. And they've had a bunch of stories again of people coming in that were super high or doing pills or drunk and just, acting a fool or just really causing a commotion and trying to fight, the head instructor. Well, I bring this up because last week we had a person who was completely out of his mind coming to the gym. A lot of just dude had a lot of issues. Now I'm sitting at my desk. From 6 to 7 p.m., I'm just the front desk guy. People come in. We usually have a couple of appointments every Tuesday and Thursday. Coming in to try the adult class. Brandon usually teaches it, so it's the class we like to have students come and try because it just gives you a really good look at the school. And anyways, we had two people that night, met them, introduced them, gave them the whole spiel, asked them what their goals were, how they found out about jiu-jitsu, showed them around, showed them the map, and left them there. Now I'm waiting. I'm just sitting on my computer, biding my time, and somebody opens the door. Now we have a lot of students, and this would probably drive a lot of more traditional schools crazy because we have students pop up all the time late. And we're not a stickler for that. Like, we don't care. Like, if you show up 10 minutes late, we don't care. If you just want to show up and roll, we do not care. We just want you to get your training in and we want you to enjoy training. So about 6:15, class already started. The traffic's kind of done. Everyone's on the mat training. But again, we'll have some stragglers coming in all throughout the hour. So I don't even think anything of it. I just assume somebody's there. I'm watching a video. And I hear something like outside. So my office is directly, I can see the front door. But if they move, so when they open the front door, if they just move a little bit to the left, then I can't see who it is. And so, anyways, I heard some noise in the hallway, but I just thought somebody was on the phone and they were kind of talking like a muffled voice. So I just thought they were on the phone conversation and they weren't trying to be too loud. Well, after about 2 minutes, Lindsay came up and was like, "Hey, can I help you?" And then I heard, and I go out, and there's this guy in our lobby who has no shoes. He's wearing a shirt full of holes, and he just was clearly like a vagrant. He clearly was a homeless guy. And we, or our gym, is right near the railroad tracks. And so there is a homeless community that You'll see guys that they kind of live in tents out over there by the railroad tracks, and I mean it's probably 500 yards from our gym, so it's very, very close. And so we'll see those guys kind of walk in and out, but we've never had somebody actually come in. Well, this guy came in, and he's talking in just complete nonsense. He's just using like made up words. He doesn't know his name. We're like, hey man, like, what's your name? Where are you coming from? And he's like, I do not know my name. What is a name? Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Oh yeah. And I'm like, just like making weird noises like that. And he's just saying, we're like, well, you know, hey, like, where are you coming from? Is there anywhere like that you can go? And he's like, where do we all come from? I came from the dirt. We all must go back to the dirt one day. And I'm like, okay, buddy, like, I hear you. And I'm like, man, is there any way we can help you? You know, and Lindsay asks, like, hey, what is your name? Do you have any ID on you? And he's like, oh, like, you know, but then he would occasionally be like, well, is this a martial arts studio? I'm like, yeah, we practice martial arts here. You know, like, hey, maybe one day if you wanted to come back when, you know, you cleaned up and you got shoes on and everything, you know, that'd be cool. But, you know, again, is there anything we can do? And he's just like, I just woke up and I don't know where I am. And we're like, yeah, but what's your name? And he's like, I have no clue what my name is anymore. What is even a name? He just kept saying, what is even a name? And Lindsay's kind of like, okay, like, well, if you can't give us any information and you don't know where to go, like, we're going to have to call the cops. And he was like, oh, no, please. We don't need to involve the cops. And I'm like, look, man, like, how can we help you? Is there anything, like, please just help us out. Help us help you. What do you need? But he just kept bringing up, like, oh, I just don't know where I just woke up and someone had stolen my shoe. I don't have shoes. So after he said it a few times, I knew Lindsay was about to call the cops. I was like, look, I have got a couple extra pair of shoes that I keep around. And I was like, look, dude, he looked like he was about my size. I was like, look, do you need a pair of shoes? I will hook you up. And his face kind of lit up. I was like, yes, yes, I just need shoes. And I was like, look, man, I actually have an even extra pair of socks. So I gave him a clean pair of socks and one of my extra pairs of shoes there, just a New Balance pair that I used to wear all the time, but I hadn't worn in a bit. And I was just like, look, dude, please take the shoes. Takes the shoes, puts it on. But while he's there, he says a comment that was like, oh, you know, he had a bunch of tattoos on him. He was like, you know, getting tattoos, it's almost like a knife work is very similar to tattoos. He said a couple of little creepy things like that where, you know, it's about knives. And I was like, the same time though, the dude was so out of it. You know, I never felt a threat, but you just never know. I mean, when a guy doesn't know his name, he doesn't have ID, he doesn't know where he's coming from. He just can't answer straight. He's talking, he's like rambling and he's muttering weird things under his breath. And he's talking about the dirt and what is it? You know, you've got to be on high alert. And so that was the only time I kind of was like, when he mentioned a knife a couple times and like twice. And I was like, oh, okay, buddy, like, you got the shoes, now you can go on your journey, you know, and back to your journey. And he ended up leaving and walking away. And we saw him, he just walked down the road and he was walking back towards the railroad track. So who knows where he was going, but then there was a car that pulled up and it was like, looked like it was searching for somebody. So I didn't know if that had to do with him or maybe it was something completely unrelated. And that was a couple of minutes after he left. But then part of me now is kind of like, man, since he ended up, like, was he in the right mind enough to know, like, is he going to come back? And just because I gave him my, like, shoes, is he going to come back the next time and, like, want something more? Or is this going to be a problem? I don't have an issue with helping people at all, you know, but when people are out of their mind, it is kind of unsettling when you really deal with somebody that's in that bad a shape. And it just reminds me of, like, when I tell people, I'm like, look, I don't mind trying to help you with your, you know, you come to me and you're like, hey, I just want to talk about a life situation, you know, me and my girlfriend, we're fighting a lot. You know, I just need a little bit of counseling. I can do that. You know, I can do the basic things. Or, hey, I'm not happy with my job. what would you do in this situation? Okay, you know, I try not to tell people like what to do with their lives, but if they ask my opinion on something like that, I've got no issue being a counselor. But when people come to me with heavy stuff, or especially like something like this, where it's clear this guy was on who knows what, and you know, he truly needs help, it's like, I am not in position to help this person. Like, I don't know the first thing of what the actual thing to do. Again, I'm happy to give you my shirt off my back, or again, I got an extra pair of shoes. I'd give five more of those dude shoes. I have quite a few pairs, but I'm not equipped to deal. And then you always just do worry about like, what if they have an episode, or if they do have a freak out, or they do get violent. And I'm super, super confident in my ability to defend myself in a situation like that, but you just never want it to come to that. And the last thing I want to do is like have to tackle a guy to the ground and like put him to sleep. And it just made me think a lot though about people's problems, and how while jiu-jitsu is a great, great outlet for growth and for people to just deal and grow and better themselves, there are things, there are issues out there where it's like, jiu-jitsu is not like, you need to go seek professional help. And, you know, I don't know, you know, part of me wonders like, would have been better off if, you know, we would have called somebody and maybe it was the cops and they just got somebody that could help him, or was it better to just let him go on his way? And I don't know. Now, guys, I did an episode where I talked about the Gracie Universe, where I talked about Henner and Huron's program, where they have a lot of these pop-up schools, and a lot of these are being run by non-black belts, and there's a lot of even blue and purple belts running schools out there teaching the Gracie Combatus curriculum, and they're promoting through the Gracie system. And I received a little bit of bash. Like, I had a couple of you guys that listen. Who knows if you still listen anymore. Maybe I offended you. But you were like, hey, I think that program's great. Or I train at one of those, and my experience has been nothing but good. It's not as McDojo as you make it sound. And my thing is this. It's like, if there's 1,000 schools like that, you know, and there's blue and purple belts running it and they're promoting like that, yes, I imagine there are some good dudes out there that are trying their best and they're trying to teach the curriculum and everything, but there are going to be a bunch of shady dudes, people that are doing the minimum work, they're getting these certificates, and then they're teaching people and they're not truly qualified to do so. And in that episode, I talked about a school that had opened up in Madison, and it was being run by a purple belt, and how he was promoting blue belts in less than 4 months. And I knew a couple of those guys. One of them was a former student, and this guy only trained with us for like 2 months, but he went over there, and a couple months later, blue belt. Just no way that's possible. No way this guy learned, even if it was just the Gracie curriculum, right? Even if it was just Gracie combatives, there's no way in hell he learned the Gracie combatives well enough in less than 3 months. I mean, that's a pretty detailed, I mean, there's 30 plus movements in there, and they're pretty comp, like, to do them at a high level. I mean, to me, it would take at least 8 months if you were pretty dedicated to get a good standard of those movements. But anyways, this guy got in 3 months. And then there was another guy that went out there whose kids had taken class at our gym, and he never trained, but he was a helicopter dad, and he was honestly just kind of a pain in the ass. He just wasn't the best person to have around. We had multiple issues with this guy. Well, he ended up leaving, and lo and behold, again, I look, he went over there, never trained with us. We always invited him to, you know, because he always had things he wanted to change with the kids' class. And we're like, look, you know, our kids' class, our kids' program meets twice a week. We're not trying to win world championship with the kids. They can move up to the adult class, which trains every single day. And it's, you know, super, I feel like our adult program is super high level, and they can do that at the age of 11. Like, once they start getting 11, 12, they can jump up there and they will have years. They want to spend the next 50 years training underneath us. They can do that. But for the kids, let's keep it fun. But they still do a lot of live training. They do lots of wrestling training. They definitely are very, very hands-on, and they get after it. But they do play games sometimes. And that was like his big criticism. And one of the games that he always hated was a game that the like 8-9 year olds would play called musical jujitsu, where essentially it was musical chairs, but they would just do different positions. So they would play music, the kids would run around the mat, and they would say backpack from the back, or mount position, or armbar from the guard, and the kids would have to find a partner and they have to demonstrate the move. And he just hated this. He thought it was like completely pointless, and he was like, I don't understand why they're not drilling like adults, and why it's not super serious. And anyways, that was like his big criticism. Well, again, he ends up leaving, and I see that he gets his blue belt 3-4 months after he left our place. And haven't thought anything about it. Again, did the podcast where I talked about it, because I feel like I need to call it out. Just like, hey, the guys, this is out there. I think this is the beginning of the watering down process of jiu-jitsu as more and more of these people get promoted. And then it's like, well, now it's blue belts, and the next thing is going to be purple and brown. Because that was one of the things people were like, well, I don't think you understand. You can't just get a purple belt online. Just wait. As more and more money pours in and more of these people get it, that's exactly what's going to happen. These people are already not rolling. They're not already not doing a lot of the combat stuff. They're just doing the drilling. It's not going to be long before it's like, okay, well, now you can get your purple belt. Now you can get your brown. And soon there's going to be black belts that, I mean, the standard's going to be incredibly, incredibly low for some of these organizations. And I look at the Gracie Combatives as the leading, the forefront of that problem. But anyways, so today, hanging out, one of the students comes in. I was getting ready to roll, so I work out or lead a workout with the guys from 11 to 12, and then from 12 to 1, one of the students teaches a noon class, and then from 1 to 2:30 we roll. And so I usually work out, take that hour off, and then roll from 1 to 2:30. Well, one of our guys comes in, and he lives about 30 minutes away from us, and he lives in a smaller town. And he was telling me about this school that had just opened up there and how it was one of those Gracie Combative school. And he was telling me, he was like, yeah. And the guy, like, I met the guy and he's a blue belt, and he got his blue belt from that Gracie Combatives in Madison, Alabama. And he was just telling me all this stuff, but I was asking him like, oh, that's cool. Like, you should come train, or if you want to stop in at 10th Planet Decatur, you should. And he was kind of like, he's like, I don't roll anymore. I was like, I can't roll because of my injuries. I just teach Gracie Combatives. And I teach kids classes. And he's like, oh, cool, you know. Well, he met that guy. And then 2 days later, he met that guy's kind of like partner. And this guy was subleasing. He was teaching like a very traditional martial art, like Kung Fu or something like Kung Fu Mantis style, something like that. Well, anyways, that guy, somehow they met and they talked, and they started talking, and he was like, yeah, I was subletting out of from this guy, and he's I've just had issues with him, like a lot of the time the gym's not open when it's supposed to be open. And anyways, but I was just asking, I was like, who is this guy? And he was telling me, and he told me the guy's name, and I was like, wait, is this like an older guy? And he kind of explained it to him, and I was like, oh my god, this dad has opened up his own jiu-jitsu school in a smaller town as a blue belt, and he's teaching Gracie Combatives. And of all the people, it just blows my mind that this, like, when people open up jiu-jitsu gyms, it just blows my mind. Especially people that never try, like, again, like, we asked him, like, hey, like, you should train. Hey, like, you know, if you have this much training and you want to get into the sport, why don't you start training? Like, our adult program's like our biggest part. You see, our adult program's our biggest program. We have a lot of competitors, but we also have a lot of dads. It's just a good time. It's good vibes. You don't even have to roll. I remember telling, like, we don't even have to roll. If you're too injured and you're too worried about getting injured, well, just come in, do the technique. Now, you're not going to get promoted that way, but you can like learn the art. You can get into it. But he didn't want that, right? So he goes to a Gracie Combative school. A couple months later, gets his blue belt. And now, I mean, I saw he got his blue belt maybe like, I don't know, 8-9 months ago. I don't know when I did. Whenever I did that podcast, it was very close to around that time. So I feel like that was maybe in September of last year. Well, again, just found out he's had opened up a jiu-jitsu school already. And I'm like, man, you talk about how crazy you have to be to have trained for just a couple of months, got your belt, and then to think that you are qualified to open up a jiu-jitsu school. without having trained, without having rolled, without having doing any of that stuff, and with probably having drilled the greats and combatives. I mean, let's be honest. How many times, let's say he's training twice a week, even if he was training every day for 6 months, how many times, do you think he's qualified to teach Gracie combatives? I have a hard time believing that. And I'm telling you this story, again, the reason I'm bringing this up, because this is going to become more and more common. And I have two thoughts on this. One, it just bothers me that some people's first jiu-jitsu experiences are going to be with a guy like him. And they're just going to get a really, like, poor impression of jiu-jitsu. And whenever I read, like, the combative statement and everything, it just blows me away. Like, Kenner and Huron have truly, to me, conned their people and just the community when they say, like, look, these places aren't safe. If you're rolling and under, like, if you haven't been training a year and your academy is letting you roll, that's negligent. That's negligent. And a white belt, like, they have no business training with colored belts. And then the whole, oh, these people aren't prepared for self-defense situations. I'm telling you, I've watched tons of videos of those guys. I've seen the type of students. I've seen the work that they're doing. I would take any of our students, any of them, and I'd pit them up against them in any scenario, whether it was an MMA fight, whether it was self-defense, whether it was just to the takedown, whether it was just to the tap. Give me a student that has trained under us twice a week for 1 year, and then one of their students that's trained with them for twice a week for 1 year. I'm talking about actually Henner and Huron, not even these. Obviously, I would take it against the blue and purple belt, and I would feel super confident that our students would perform very admirably in this challenge. But yeah, I don't know. You know, the other part of me, though, is like, man, every time one of these schools open, it just makes a school like ours that much special, or a school like yours. If you're training at a really good school where you have a black belt instructor who has put in the years and really, like, dedicated himself to, like, learning the art, or dedicated herself to learning the art, it just makes those places that much more special. And then when you get the crossover trains, or you happen to meet in competition, you destroy those people, and they always think that you're like magic, or the students of your school are magic. But I'm always blown away, though, by guys that claim they love jiu-jitsu or claim they're super into the sport. Again, they want to, like, start a school and all this stuff. But then they're not willing to drive an extra 30 minutes to train with the best guys in the area, to learn from the best guys. And now I understand if that place is super toxic and those people, and we've all heard the stories, you know, crazy things happen at martial arts schools, from teachers and owners trying to sleep with students or students' wives, to kind of really cult-like atmospheres where you have to bow to senseis or call them weird names, and it's just a really weird vibe. But I also think there's a lot of good schools out there, and I would say any major city now, any city with 100,000 people or more, they have a quality jiu-jitsu gym. And if you're like, I love jiu-jitsu enough to open up a gym, but you're not willing to drive 45 minutes at least once a week to cross train and learn from people that are much better than you and much more skilled than you, then what are you doing? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd rather learn from these guys all across the country. And I understand back in the old days, because back in the old days, there wasn't, like, they were only in the major, major cities. And so a guy like Brandon, you know, he really didn't have much choice. He had to go and find Eddie Bravo. But even then, he was bringing guys in constantly. He was going out to LA constantly. He was sacrificing to learn the art. But now there's so many dudes that, again, like, it's 30 minutes is too far of a drive. This is something you want to commit to. This is something you say you love, or you think the sport's amazing and super cool, and you can't drive 30 minutes once a week. I'm talking about once. I'm not even telling you have to join. Hell, you could even start your own gym. You still should be cross-training with the best guys in your area, right? Am I crazy for thinking that? You should want to. You should, for the betterment of yourself and your students, you should want to train with them. You should be testing yourself. You should be going out there. And even, okay, you're too injured to do it. You're too injured to roll. You're too injured to whatever. You can only drill. Well, you should be sending your students. I just have a really hard time believing. But this is, like, all the cases I've heard of, this is probably the craziest story of somebody opening up a jiu-jitsu gym. And I just don't understand the motive, like what his motive is. Like, there's no way he can be getting rich from it because it is in a small town. And like, we're pretty, I mean, I can't imagine he has more than 20 students. So it's not something that's like, man, you know, he's moved in. And there's, he moved into a city like Nashville. And obviously Nashville has a bunch of schools. But just imagine a city like Nashville that within an hour of the downtown, I mean, there's a million plus people. And so it's like, there's no jujitsu gyms in Nashville, so I got to be the first. And he opens up and there's just a line out the door. It's like, no, he moved to a small town and they actually have a jujitsu gym there now. And it's super close to Madison and Huntsville. And then it's pretty close. I mean, it's that city's probably 30 minutes from us. And so I don't understand. I mean, is it just like a power play or like, hey, I want to teach people? Because there's a really weird, like really weird people become martial art instructors. And there's a reason why people in positions of power, but especially like, again, you hear some really weird stories about martial arts owners like trying to manipulate people and stuff. So part of me is like, it's just a ploy to like, convince people you're a badass and do the whole like, well, I own a jiu-jitsu school. I teach jiu-jitsu. I teach Gracie combatives. And what's crazy is I went to their website, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about it, is I went to the website because I was like, what does his website look like? Does he have an instructor's bio? And I looked at his instructor's bio, and it's just completely full of crap. I mean, it was stuff like, I started training in 2000 under one of the Gracies, and I remember he told me because they moved from another state. They moved from a place up north, and he told me that he had trained like 8 months there. And he barely trained. He was still a white belt. So he had never been promoted, nothing like that. And he was always like, I don't really know anything. I did this early 2000s, and I trained for maybe up to a year, but I got hurt and never trained again. And I just always knew when my kids came of age, I wanted them to train. But on his bio, it was like started training in 2000 and trained directly under like Roaring Gray, one of the Gracies. I can't remember which one it was. And it was just like competed and won multiple grappling events, a Naga champion, like Midwestern pro champion. And there was a couple of other, and it was like multiple MMA fight winner, of like unsanctioned, had like a couple of unsanctioned MMA fights and was the winner there. And I'm just like, there is no way this is true. And like I said, when the dude came in, it was, maybe up to a year. I'm still a white belt. Trust me, I don't really know anything. That was his story to me and to us and to Brandon. Now, when you go online, he's opened a jiu-jitsu school. It's, actually, I have 24 years of grappling training and yada, yada, yada. I trained with the Gracies. And he has a picture where I guess he went out to Gracie University between him. It's Henner and Huron. Like, he went out and took a picture there. So, like, who knows? But I don't know. And look, if I offended some of you Gracie University guys, I'm not saying the program's bad. I think the curriculum's great. But what's going on with this stuff is a travesty, and it really is going to lead to, especially the Gracie's name. I mean, people are already losing tons of respect for the Gracie's, like people that actually train, people that actually compete, people that actually, I think, are furthering the sport. A lot of those guys are kind of jokes to those people. Like, nobody cares anymore if, like, you have Gracie lineage. It's like, no, who cares? We care more about what you've done. But this is just another thing that kind of just puts a black mark on the Gracies. And I don't know. I mean, I guess people will do anything for a dollar. Until next time, guys, I love and appreciate you. Have a great week. Peace.